the rabidness with which that they are kind of approaching this matter. It's clear that they're trying to take Judge Griffin down. They saw an opportunity to do so, and they wasted no time in doing that. The problem
I want to thank you very much, Mike Lowe, for joining us, one of the lawyers for Judge Wendell Griffin. That does it for our broadcast. Democracy Now! Is on the road. I'll be speaking at Philadelphia Free Library tonight at 7:30. And then tomorrow in New York City on Tuesday, and on Wednesday at Seattle Town Hall and Washington State. Finally, on Friday, we'll be speaking at the New School. You can check our website at democracynow.org. Then we're on to Beaverton, Oregon, and then going through California next week. That does it for our broadcast, Democracy Now!, produced by many remarkable people. And I want to give special thanks to David Goodman and Dennis Moynihan. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez.
Good morning. It's 8 o'clock. This is KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to be a founding sponsor of the Waterfront Blues Festival. This year, the festival will be held June 30th through July 4th at Tom McCall Waterfront Park. Festival passes are on sale now, including the Blues Buddy Pass and the basic 5-day pass at early bird prices. More information about the passes, the festival, and more can be found at kboo.fm/WBF2017.
Dear KBOO listeners, donate before our next membership drive starts and enter our sweepstakes. Grand prize is 2 benefactor passes to the 30th Annual Waterfront Blues Festival, June 30th to July 4th. This 4-day pass guarantees early entry, seating close to the front of the main stage, shade, food and drink coupons, and much more. First prize is gift certificates to Brighton Bush, offering overnight accommodations, hydrotherapy, hot springs, and more at the Brighton Bush Hot Springs in Detroit, Oregon. Second prize is a Portland Center Stage Flex Pass and dinner at Kale. To learn more about our sweepstakes, go to kboo.fm/2017 Spring Sweepstakes.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to host Chris Hedges Friday, May 26th at 7 p.m. at the Aladdin Theater in Portland. Hedges takes a provocative look at the current state of revolt in the United States and will recount the U.S.'s continuing history of domestic terrorism while outlining ways for communities to resist before it's too late. Again, that's Chris Hedges, Friday, May 26th at 7 p.m. at the Aladdin Theater, 3017 Southeast Milwaukee Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Good morning. This is Monday, May 8th. And you're listening to More Talk Radio on your community radio station, KBOO-FM. I am Cecil Prescott, and if you're listening in Portland, you might be listening to 90.7, in Hood River, 91.9, in Corvallis, Albany, 104.3, and via the World Wide Web, it is KBOO.FM. This morning, Monday, May 8th, we are talking with at least one representative from Emerge, Interfaith.
Movement for Immigrant Justice.
Excellent. Pat Roemer, and she has been a volunteer activist with that organization for some time.
Well, since 2007, when ICE did the big raid up in the Del Monte plant and the new sanctuary movement was formed.
Yeah. Well, that was certainly an important moment in terms of the awakening here and what's been happening. And maybe one of the things I wanted to ask you, because you've been activist in Central America issues for some time, was the what's different about the New Century movement from the movement in the 80s?
Well, I think there are several things, one of which is that in the 80s, it was not a crime to cross the U.S. border. I mean, it was a misdemeanor, and that for years, people who came across the southern border between the United States and Mexico may have been turned back by Border Patrol or Immigration and Customs Enforcement agents. But now, it is a crime, and if you're caught, you can be sent to a detention center. Or you can be deported, and if you re-enter, then each time the penalties go up. And that was about 1996 that this changed. So in the early 80s, when the flood or the first group of Central America refugees started pouring across the border due to civil war in El Salvador and Guatemala in particular, and certainly the Contra War that the Reagan administration waged against the Sandinistas in Nicaragua, all of that created a lot of pressure because people were being killed and family members fled. And the sanctuary movement was formed in the early 80s. In fact, it was South, why am I blanking on the name, in Tucson, Arizona. The Presbyterian, Southside Presbyterian Church in Tucson, Arizona, that declared sanctuary in 1982. And that was particularly after the murder of Archbishop Romero in El Salvador. And so a lot of faith communities across the United States examined their consciences and decided that they were really, in many ways, upholding the law, because we do have international laws about protecting human rights and people needing refuge who are fleeing violence. But at that point, under the Ronald Reagan administration, they were unwilling to acknowledge that people were fleeing violence, because our government, in fact, was arming most of those countries of El Salvador and Guatemala and Honduras, and then, of course, the counterinsurgencies, the Contras, to destroy the Sandinista government. So there were not as many, you might say, legal penalties for people to get involved in harboring or giving safe place or sanctuary to refugees fleeing violence. There was a lot of political advocacy to convince Congress to offer temporary protected status to people, which we have done in other parts of the world, people fleeing a war or violence. And it's true that the U.S. government finally did file charges against Reverend John Fife, the pastor at Southside Presbyterian, and a number of other lay leaders across the United States who had helped. But ultimately, they never served a day in jail. And it just brought really more attention to the fact of why people were coming to the United States. In a way, it was the reverse of perhaps what the administration hoped would happen. And so, you know, there were peace accords that were finally signed in the late 80s throughout Central America that did not necessarily bring peace. But the migration of many Central Americans really lessened. And then you kind of fast forward to 2014, when the first group of young people started entering the United States. Technically, they're called unaccompanied minors. If you enter the United States and you're under the age of 18, then there's a different set of laws in the United States that pertain to you. And the Office of Refugee Resettlement has a particular responsibility to care for unaccompanied minors. But it was so many that came. And I think that particularly the border states were just overwhelmed with what are we going to do with all these kids. And initially they put them in warehouse type of shelters, yes, which then brought a lot of very negative press. And slowly, I think the U.S. government began to realize that they were facing a lot more people coming from Central America rather than Mexico, and that they were coming for reasons of what we would consider refugee status. They were fleeing violence, they were fleeing murders, they were fleeing, in the case of women, a lot of sexual abuse, trafficking, etc. And so again, and this was in 2007 here in Portland when the Immigration and Customs Enforcement did a workplace raid on Del Monte. And it was mostly women who worked there that the new sanctuary movement in Portland or in Oregon was formed, as once again people realized some of the conditions people were, why they were coming, and that they needed support. And in the last 3 years, I guess, since that first larger wave of Central American refugees came to the United States, as we've learned more about the root causes of why people are leaving, which are drug wars, and ironically, in El Salvador, the gang members whose were sons and perhaps daughters of people who came in the 80s fleeing violence, and they themselves became involved in gang warfare in the United States, were deported by the United States for committing crimes, and now have successfully, some of them, set up businesses in El Salvador, which are running drugs and things like that. And it's just enhanced the violence for the ordinary person living in these countries. So the sanctuary today, and I actually, because I volunteered the last 2.5 years in Tucson, Arizona, and working with humanitarian organizations there, and I had a chance to talk to Reverend Fife about his view of the differences between the 80s and now. And because at that time, not only Reverend Fife, but a number of other people actually drove to the border and picked up people and transported them. Now that you would immediately be thrown into jail if you did that. There's very strong, clear law that says if you aid in the transportation of a person who's undocumented, you are eligible for a jail sentence.
You're listening to KBOO. This is Cecil Prescott. We are speaking with Pat Broomer with Emerge Interfaith Movement for Immigrant Justice. Portland, and particularly we want to highlight their activities, their understandings of the changes and challenges of immigrants today, and to highlight an event that unfortunately is and will be the 9th annual this coming Saturday. Mm-hmm. Want to mention something about that?
So when you're trying to bring, when you're trying to both help people, and you know, there's strong in most major religions, a strong imperative for helping the stranger, you know, feeding the hungry, taking care of the sick, etc., and welcoming the sojourner. And that's a large part of the reason why churches and synagogues and mosques and other faith communities have participated in the, quote, sanctuary movement, which is looking at providing safe haven and welcoming the stranger. That runs counter not only to this administration's policies, but previous administration's policies. And so when you're trying to figure out how do you both lift up the issue so that people can understand better why people are here, and what the human costs of having to make the tough decision to leave your country, and then what happens when they get here. And so the detention centers, which are for the most part run by private corporations, CCA and GEO, and they have a contract with the government to keep those beds occupied every night. And I believe there's 34,000 beds in the United States. It's a money-making operation. Yes. And the conditions under which people are detained or kept in the detention centers are not great. They're really jails. They're prisons. And so we decided to look at doing a Mother's Day vigil the Saturday before Sunday, Mother's Day, outside the detention center in Tacoma. And this was, I'm not sure if it was the state of Washington sanctuary movement or it was Oregon's that came up with this idea, but it means that every year for the last 9 years, and I think this is my fifth time I'll be going, we gather outside the detention center, which looks like a fortress, it looks like a prison, and we do a variety of things. I mean, the Washington folks, the New Sanctuary Movement, the a council of churches, different kinds of groups that are active, excuse me, gather is from 12 to 1:30 in Tacoma outside the detention center. And there's usually a lot of singing. There is a worship experience put on that is interfaith. We always remember, one of the moving parts to me is we always remember the people who've died in detention during the previous year, and read off their names and the countries where they come from. And it's not just Central America or Mexico. There are people from Africa, people from Romania, people from all over the world who have gotten caught up in our broken immigration system and end up in detention center. We pass out flowers to the families that are coming to visit someone who is detained. We talk with them. We ask them to let the person who's inside the detention center know that there are people outside who are thinking of them and praying for them and remembering them. We always do some kind of symbolic action, which is either putting flowers in the, it's not a wall, but it's a fence, or we put, you know, cards, different kinds of things. I'm not sure what we'll do this year. Last year, a very creative effort by a group out of Seattle, they videotaped. They asked people if they'd be willing to tell their story, and so that they could begin to document stories of people who had loved ones or family members who were in the detention center. And then there's always a wonderful food truck that pulls up with burritos and tacos and things like that, and we sit down and share food together.
And this annual effort is to hopefully raise awareness and to offer support. You mentioned earlier the religious or faith calling out to welcome the stranger, and that seems so counter to many of the messages we're hearing from our wider society. Say something about the idea of the detention center. How do people end up there? When? How are they picked up? How long are they there? Yeah.
I'll give two examples. One is when I went to the border, it was really because that's where the immediacy of people who are detained. And sometimes part of the reason, because we have such a complicated, and I said the word broken before, immigration system. I mean, I've heard immigration judges say we have a broken immigration system. And it has to do with the fact that some people can turn themselves in at the border to the Border Patrol and say, I'm seeking asylum. And particularly if they're traveling with a young child, mostly it's women with small children, sometimes it is men with their children, then after 3 days of detention in a Border Patrol facility, they are released under their own recognizance for a six-month period because they're traveling to a family member. And I've worked in two shelters in Tucson where ICE would bring the women, and occasionally, as I said, a father with small children. And they would stay for a 24-48-hour period until arrangements could be made to travel to their family member. That does not mean they get to stay in the United States. It just means they have 6 months to find an attorney and file a legal case for asylum, asking for asylum. And if that case is heard, then it takes 2 or 3 years before it could be processed. An awful lot of them do not have the funds, or their family have the funds, for an attorney. They have to show up at the ICE office nearest to wherever their location is at the end of 6 months. And then a process for deportation will begin if they are not able to show evidence. For those who cross without children, at least this is true in Arizona, and who are captured, there's something called Operation Streamline, which is a daily federal court hearing in Tucson, in which anywhere from 35 to 50 people, mostly men, a few women, are brought in shackles and are seated and are explained, the judge explains to them that by crossing the border, they committed a felony. They do have legal representation. The lawyers get probably 20 or 30 minutes with them before that court hearing. Many of them, practically very few of them, speak or understand English. So there are court interpreters. The judge is speaking in English, and then it's translated. So I would say they have 5 minutes to make up their minds whether they're going to plead guilty or not guilty. If they plead not guilty, they will spend time in a jail until either there are no court-appointed attorneys other than this Operation Streamline. And so if they plead guilty, and this is the first time they've crossed, they either will get deported immediately or they'll get 30 days in a detention center. And each time they cross, the amount of time they'll spend in detention center increases. It can go up to 180 days. It can go up to 2 years. And so then after that very rapid court hearing, they are taken to a detention center. There are three detention centers in Arizona. One is run by ICE, and the other two are run by CCA, because I became a detention center visitor and visited women in the detention center. In Oregon, it's normally people who live here. You know, I mean, I think everybody's seen in the papers in the last couple of months, we've had DACA students, Dreamers, who have, if not, who have some form of protection. They should not be at the top of the priority list. Mm-hmm. They're students, you know. And then there's, in other cases where there have been some ICE raids, but they're looking for particular people who have, let's say, a criminal record or have committed some form of felony. If, let's say, they're out working in a field someplace or they're in a workplace, then there are people caught up in that raid who may not have papers but who are not criminals, quote. And yes. So it's those people who then will be sent to Tacoma, who have family members, who may be active in a local church. And this is where Emerge gets involved. We get a call from a family member. We need someone to write letters attesting to this person's good standing in the community. And they provide the evidence of that. So we do letter writing to an immigration court judge. We accompany people to a court hearing. 2 weeks ago, I went with a young man to his ICE interview here in Portland. Because, you know, this is a young man who came with his two younger sisters to reunite with his father, who lives in Eastern Oregon. He came when he was under 18. He's a high school student. His sister and brother are in school. But he doesn't speak much English, and he was really nervous about going in to meet with the ICE person. And so I and another woman who speaks Spanish accompany them. And I think that's kind of, it's the witnessing, Cecil, as you know, within our religious tradition, to be, you know, witnesses and standing up with people so that they are not alone. They feel the support of the broader community. And, you know, one hopes, and I think in the case of this young man, there's a very good chance that he will be able to stay, you know. I've learned so much in the last couple of years about the legal rules around immigration. I think that a lot of Americans don't understand, you know. I'll contrast it very quickly to hearing on last night's news that evidently part of the Kushner family, who's in China, made a presentation about investing in a development in New Jersey, and did not promise, but did talk about the visas that if you put $500,000 into a development, you get a green card.
Green card, yes.
You know, and I'm just thinking to myself, what's wrong with this picture? There's all this anti-immigration talk, and yet someone who's related to the president's family is talking about a loophole that does exist, and that if you have money, you can come in.
You mentioned earlier, and I think it's correct, in terms of our broken immigration system, and it's something that administration after administration has failed to address. not only the administration, but also, you know, in terms of Congress. We're speaking with Pat Roemer here on More Talk Radio at KBOO. We're speaking about immigrant justice. She is with Emerge Interfaith Movement for Immigrant Justice, and they will have their annual Mother's Day vigil at the Tacoma Northwest Detention Center this Saturday, May 13th. It takes place from 12 to 1:30. There will be a carpool from Portland meeting at Ascension Catholic Church at 8:15 a.m. And if you like more information, you may contact Emerge. We have a couple of callers here. Let's go to our first caller. Yes? Camilo.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Camilo Marquez. I'm a participant member of the Buddhist Peace Fellowship. Mm-hmm. And we are members of Emerge. One of our members has donated the donation that's required in order to join. And I have am attempting to notify her and another Buddhist leader in the Portland metro area about this event, and we'll try to see whether or not we can organize any Buddhists to accompany you to the demonstration.
That would be wonderful. I know that the Buddhist Peace Fellowship has joined Emerge, and I just think that's great. We look forward to a continued participation and working together on this critical issue.
And if you would reach out to us, you could sort of give us an idea of how we can be more helpful and what more active ways we can participate in your your campaign. We have done one immigrant action. We organized a Rescue Lady Liberty event, and we had about 70 or 80 participants. So I think that there are people in Portland who are interested, and perhaps we can work together to get Buddhists in the Seattle area to participate.
That would be great. I think part of it is just being creative. In other words, the idea of coming up with the Mother's Day vigil, everybody has a mother, you know? It's kind of like looking for ways to creatively bring the issue, whether that's doing some role-playing and some... we've been talking... Excuse me. And we meet, for anyone who's interested, we do have individuals who join the Interfaith Movement for Immigrant Justice as well. And we meet the second Tuesday of each month at St. Michael's and All Angels in Northeast Portland at the corner of 43rd and Broadway from 6:30 to 8:30. So we'll be meeting tomorrow night, for example. It's a good way to kind of find out what's going on and how one can get involved. But we've been talking about different ways of accompanying undocumented people. And the Jewish community did a wonderful Passover Seder right outside the ICE office on what was for Christians Good Friday, but it was the week of Passover. And it was a beautiful experience. There were about, I think, 100 people there, and perhaps some from the Buddhist Peace Fellowship also. We're looking at doing monthly vigils outside the ICE office and letting the ICE employees know what we're doing. You know, I mean, it's a peaceful act. It's an act that comes out of different faith traditions that all talk about struggle and freedom and justice. And so that's one of the things that we haven't quite figured out how to do that. If we ask different faith traditions to sign up for a monthly vigil, organize it, and then we put out the word. So it's like, you know, use all our creativity, in some ways even sense of play.
Yes.
One of the things that the Buddhists have been doing is we're doing public meditations, walking meditations, sitting meditations at events that are organized by other people. So that could be something that we contribute.
Great.
Excellent. Thank you, Camilo.
Okay. Bye-bye.
And to contact the Interfaith Movement for Immigrant Justice, the number is 503-550-3510. You can email them at portlandsanctuary@gmail.com. And we're speaking this morning with Pat Roemer, who is a active member of Emerge, and we're talking about the general movement for immigrant justice in America. Certainly things have been heightened since the new president has entered office, and in part his campaign was anti-immigrant. What was it? Keep America Great. Mm-hmm. Not so subtle hint, but certainly the struggle has been over several administrations. Certainly, the Obama administration deported. Thank you. Deported more than any other administration of people.
I think this is what is so, I think it's really tragic. We are a country, we all say this, we are a country of immigrants with two exceptions in the sense if you look at immigrants as wanting to be coming to this country. One is the Native Americans who were here. And the second is Africans who were brought as slaves. You can technically say they in-migrated, but they didn't have a choice. Even so, when you look at the history of immigrants and what immigrants have brought to this country, they have built this country. I mean, the strength of our country is the diversity of who is here. And yesterday at my church, which is Ainsworth United Church of Christ, and in the United Church of Christ nationally, was Immigrant Justice Sunday. And our pastor, you know, said, well, we have immigrants in our congregation. And she went over to an older white woman and said, where did you come from? Well, she came from Hungary. You know, and we tend to forget that, you know, it isn't just people from Mexico or people from Central America. And of course, if you're in Europe, you're looking at a large a number of people coming from Northern Africa and from the Middle East. And so they're people migrating all over. So it's how do we get at what are the values we agree upon as a nation? And then how do we translate that into laws that are clearer to people, number one, and I would argue that are much more just and humane? And there have been all sorts of groups that have come up with policy recommendations. We seem to have a problem between the Republicans and Democrats at the national level in trying to come to some agreement. And they came very close a couple of years ago. And each time it just seems like one side or the other says, I just can't go there. And so it's like, I mean, I think it would be a great accomplishment, President Trump, if you're listening, if you were to bring the two sides together and say, we got to solve this problem. Why should we spend millions of dollars building a wall when many of the people who are already here who are immigrants are contributing to the wealth of our society? I mean, right here in Oregon, if really everyone who's here without papers were deported, who is going to pick the strawberries? Who is going to prune the vines for grapes and for wine? Who is going to, you know, in terms of the forestry and nursery services? And then there's other people at other levels. It's not just farm worker, you know. But there are, see, I guess I would like to approach it to get the businesses, because this is a business-oriented administration, to get the businesses who are benefiting by the labor of people that they may or may not know are undocumented, to really use their political influence to say, this has got to change. Not just people who can contribute $500,000, mm-hmm. but people who are the backbone of our local economy.
You're listening to More Talk Radio. I'm Cecil Prescott. With us this morning is Pat Roemer of Emerge. Speaking about immigration justice, our numbers here are 503-231-8187. Let's go to our next caller. Tim, good morning.
Good morning. Great program and how timely. I'm calling from the Dalles, where we have our regional correctional facility called NorCor, and I'm sure you have heard about it. Mm-hmm. It's been in the news. just wanted to let people know that if they want to participate, there's an opportunity every day from 5 to 6:30 in front of NORCOR. We have a couple contacts here you could call to get more information. We had a very large rally outside the facility on Saturday where there was over 150 people coming from as far away as Salem and Woodburn. Ramon Rodriguez, the president of the Immigrant Farm Workers Union, PECUN, attended and brought representatives. Numerous groups in the Gorge Faith communities here, immigrant justice organizations attended. So if you haven't seen information about that, you can call us. Here's a number, 541-806-6722, and we can give you more specific information about it, and we can give you links to groups here actively working. So thank you very much for this program. It's very, very important. We have ICE detainees here currently now.
Yeah, hold on one second. We want to speak with you.
Yeah, Tim, I heard, and I would like to know, that the hunger strike has ended, but is that true?
Yes, they began their hunger strike on Saturday. The officials in NORCOR don't consider refusing food a hunger strike until they have done it for 3 days.
I see.
So the information that you'll get through the media will say the hunger strike lasted 3 days. It lasted 6 days.
Mm-hmm.
They had a list of specific demands for clothing items that they were not given. They have to buy almost everything, including hygiene items. They have no hot food. They were given milk once a week. The facility was described as full of gnats and flies. Not able to verify that, but we had volunteer ACLU attorneys and some officials from ACLU Oregon in the facility beginning a week ago, Sunday, Monday, I believe Wednesday, and in between that, local clergy were allowed to go in and visit and just basically get these people's story to what's really going on and what are they asking for. So by Friday, the administration of NORCOR granted the request. So we're doing an ongoing protest in front of there every day, and we're putting people inside on rotation every few days so we can verify, number one, that the demands are honestly going to be given, and number two, that there is no retaliation evident there.
Isn't it true also, Tim, that you're asking people to contact Governor Brown as well as Attorney General Ellen Rosenblum, because there seems to be some legal basis, given the fact that we're a sanctuary state and that this is a state of Oregon facility, not a federal facility, that there could be some conflict of law there.
That's absolutely correct. We have asked people to contact our state officials. However, that has already happened.
Good.
State attorney or AG Rosenblum came out with a statement over the weekend. We were attending a workshop in Ashland, and one of our hosts there pulled up the local paper and pointed out there was an article stating that Rosenblum came out and said it is not illegal according to the letter of the law. However, many, many people are challenging that at the moment. So that's something you'll be looking to see very shortly. And that is basically one huge argument that we and the local community who bought and paid for that facility and pay for its maintenance, we don't appreciate the use of our tax dollars basically scaring the hell out of our local immigrant community.
Yeah.
So
thank you for what you're doing there. Yeah.
We have to do this. Mm-hmm. So I'm so glad that you are having this conversation, and we need to continue. But I just wanted to let people know that if they don't want to drive to Tacoma every day, there's a like it's 1 hour. It's 1 hour from the 205 interchange to get to the Dalles.
Call us.
We will be in contact and get them looped in up here. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Tim. And the number, again, for those who are interested in what's happening in the Dalles and make contact with activists there, are 541-806-6722.
That's correct. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Earlier, we mentioned it in terms of the history of the sanctuary, now New Sanctuary movement in the United States, and you just mentioned your hope that the present administration perhaps would take a perspective from being it's good business mm-hmm. to try to come up with a meaningful transformation of our immigration laws. Are you aware of what our federal legislators are doing? And should we be engaged with congressional representatives or state senators?
Definitely. Oregon, we have a challenge in that five out of the six of our representatives are Democrats, which is the minority party now, and only Greg Walden is a Republican. I think as we've seen in the last couple of months, Congress has really been absorbed with changing the Affordable Health Care Act, and there seem to be a different set of priorities right now in Congress. And Greg Walden has been a very important player in that.
Yes.
If I lived in the Dalles, which is Representative Walden's district, or Medford, or Bend, or any other place in eastern Oregon, I think he needs to get a lot of contact from people who are working on human rights and immigrant rights issues. His constituency is changing.
Yes.
Everybody always, I just heard OPB refer to it recently as, you know, a much more conservative area. Mm. Look at Bend. It's got a lot of retired professional people who've moved in who are not necessarily all conservatives. You've got a large number of people who came originally as farm workers who work on the dairy farms and on the ranches and in other areas. In eastern and central eastern Oregon, as they become eligible to vote, you'll have a change in, I think, the demographic pattern there. I think that if you would approach, and Mr. Walden also has a church membership, that if one approached him and his office on what, in the long run, would be best in the interests of whether it's business, economic interests, or if it's moral values issues, I think he needs to hear from his constituency. I also think that all the Democrats on the western side, so to speak, and the two senators need to know that it's important to us to fix this system. I recently wrote my congressman, Earl Blumenauer, and got back a letter from him that he is absolutely opposed to any money going to the wall. And that didn't surprise me. I wouldn't expect that of him.
Yes.
But I think it's just saying, yes, we want to stop the money going to the wall. But what we really want to do is build a workable consensus around some aspects of immigration reform that Congress has got to act on. I mean, you know, you look at the California, Washington, and Oregon, and people kind of jokingly say that maybe we should, you know, secede from the United States and join Canada. You know, we do see things differently out here, but there's a limit to how much we can do in terms that we can pass sanctuary city resolutions, sanctuary state resolutions, etc., but we can't change the federal law.
Yes. Our numbers here are 503-231-8187. We're speaking about immigrant justice, and our guest today is Pat Roemer with Emerge. Want to remind you that if you are interested in participating in the 9th annual Mother's Day vigil at the Tacoma Northwest Detention Center, you may join them on this Saturday, May 13th, from 12 to 1:30 p.m. There will be carpooling from Portland that will leave at 8:15 at Ascension Catholic Church parking lot, and they are located at 734 Southeast 76. And let's go to our next caller. Good morning, Mike.
Hey, good morning. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Yeah, first of all, Sanctuary Cities is contributing to the homelessness that we have here in Oregon. Because when those illegals come into this state, they need housing. And what they're doing is they're making the housing market even more tighter. Right now, illegal aliens are coming here. They're not having a problem with homelessness, but American does. I talk to a lot of older, middle-class white Americans. They don't want illegal immigrants, especially the ones that fought in world wars. Now, if the illegals, why can't they fight in their country? Why can't they make their country great? The ones that run over here, in my mind, they're cowards. They won't stay and fight. They won't stay in Mexico and try to make it better. They want to come over here to America where they've never fought any wars. They have no historical contributions to this society here, but yet they want to come over and they want to reach off of what Americans have already accomplished.
Okay, hold on, Mike. Let our guest, Pat, respond.
Yeah. Thank you for raising that concern, Mike. I would just say a couple of things. One is that there are a large number of people serving in the U.S. military right now who are persons who came here, perhaps as children, from Mexico or other parts of the world, and they are among the very first to volunteer and serve, and many of them have served turns, in Afghanistan, in Iran, Iraq, excuse me. And part of that, very honestly, is because the military offers a path to citizenship, which is not particularly well known. So that I understand your point about why don't they stay and fight and improve things in their own country. I would just say that you have to look at the U.S. foreign policy and what we have done to promote to intervene in the internal politics of countries such as Guatemala and Honduras and El Salvador, and that the odds of an average person there being able to nonviolently change and improve their system are very low. I've met with many, many recent immigrants, the majority of them women, who have just absolutely horrific stories to share about what they had tried to do. I recall a woman from Honduras who had a small business. The drug gangs approached her and said that she must pay a fee to continue to operate her business. She refused. She was raped. She was almost killed, left for dead, and a neighbor picked her up and took her to a hospital. Finally, the final straw for her of leaving Honduras was when her son was threatened that if he did not join the drug gang, that he would be killed. And so she fled. And this is not a story that is unique to what is happening to people who come. It is, I wish people had the alternative to stay and build a just and peaceful world where they live. But some of them do not. And we also have some responsibility as U.S. citizens because our government has gone in and caused some of the problems.
Well, could you address the homelessness issue the homelessness issue that we're having here with Americans, because we've got a housing crisis and these illegals that come in here, they're competing for housing too. Can you address that issue?
Yeah, thank you. I will try. The reality is many people who come, particularly as farm workers, that the owners of the farms provide them housing. So they are not in direct competition with homeless people unless those homeless people wish to be the farm workers. The second is that I live in Portland. I've lived here for 20 years and grew up here and in and out, etc., is my observation is that the people who are flocking to Portland are, for the most part, white young professionals who have more money and who are able to compete for the incredibly high cost of housing. I know that the homeless is a really challenging issue in Portland and in many other parts of the United States. I don't think that undocumented people are the ones who are causing homelessness.
Hey, Mike, we have to go to our next caller, but thank you for calling and sharing your views. Mm-hmm. Let's go to our next caller. Sylvie, good morning.
Hi, this is Soleil Kabakov in the Dells.
Great. Welcome.
Thank you. I am part of the Gorge Ice Resistance Movement here at NorCor. And first, I'd like to say thank you very much for your program. It's wonderful to hear this conversation happening. And I think being in Walden's district, I do agree with what you've said, but I would like to just remind you that it's 20 counties, which is a huge piece of Oregon. Geographically, it's more than half the state. So it's a really big ship, and we are turning course. It's going to take a long time. We can't turn on a dime. Therefore, we really need our leadership to step up. We need Governor Brown to step up. We need our Attorney General Rosenblum to step up. This, I think that Oregon is now taking center stage in what really is an issue of states' rights. Oregon has said by our law, we're not going to enforce federal immigration policy, and it's time for us to really hold true to that statement. I know it's a 30-year-old law, but it's a law nonetheless. And this is our chance here for Oregon to push back and say, no, we're not going to carry out your orders. We're not going to detain these people for indefinite periods of time. And that's what we need to do, and it's a big fight, and we're in it for the long haul here in the Dells.
Thank you. I couldn't agree with you more, and I hope everybody who's listening will pick up the phone. And do you want to supply Governor Brown's telephone number as well as Ellen Rosenblum's number? I didn't bring them with me, but I know that that's one of the emails I got saying, please call them and lift your voice and let them know you expect some action on this.
Do you have that?
Yes. Would you like me to... Let me look up here. I can give you Governor Brown's number here.
And I think I think the simple message is, you know, is stop cooperating with ICE. Do not accept people who are undocumented and keep them in the NORCO facility. I know something like that, but something very simple that you can get the message across.
Definitely.
Yes, absolutely.
And also, both you and our caller mentioned in terms of activating the community, in terms of influence, Congressman Walden, and in terms of, at the last congressional break, and we saw pictures of congressional leaders go into their districts and town hall meetings. And I think it's something that people need to do in terms of going to the local offices as well as phone calls and emails to tell them that we are part of your district and we are concerned about these issues, and these are our neighbors, families, and friends.
Yeah. And that's...
Yes.
Go ahead, Celeste.
I have Governor Kate Brown's telephone number.
Okay.
Area code 503-378-4582. That's 503-378-4582.
Thank you.
Thanks very much for what you're doing.
Yes, well, I'd like to say it's my pleasure, but it's not a pleasure at all. It's incredibly heartbreaking, but I do believe that it's my duty as a concerned member of our community to speak out for those who are, you know, they're attempting to silence them behind these walls here.
Thank you for that.
Thank you. Let's go to our next caller. Angela, good morning.
Hi. Okay, so you know how the polls were wrong before the election, and everyone thought Hillary Clinton was going to win because everyone lied about being a Trump supporter. Or, I mean, a lot of people lied. Everyone familiar with that?
No, I'm not clear with what you're saying. It's difficult to hear.
Hillary Clinton was predicted to win because the polls showed that she was ahead, but then it turned out a lot of voters lied about their support for Trump, and then Trump won.
Right. I think a friend said to me...
So that's sort of kind of what I wanted to say. I'm Mexican-American. That's a prelude to what I wanted to say. I'm Mexican-American. I'm a third-generation American. My great-grandparents came here. Some of them came here from Mexico. Some of them were born here, and then the border crossed. Then there was a Mexican. I'm not sure that's really true, but some of my family are from the United States, and some came from Mexico.
Before the border crossed them.
Yeah, I know. So,
I support a wall, and I support illegal immigrants being deported because there's a conflict. I personally, from my experience, I can't speak for everyone, but I don't like illegal immigrants. I don't even really like first generation immigrants. Because this is not reported in the media, but. I think with all groups, with Latinos or African Americans or Asians, there's a lot of violence within the group, and there's statistics on this too. There's usually more violence within like a ethnic group among themselves than outside of an ethnic group.
Okay,
you know, that tends to happen. And so I experience, as an American citizen, I experience a lot of violence, attacks, and attacks from immigrants, and I.
We're running out of time, so we want to give response. How concerned about the often term things we hear about violence and from immigrant communities? Okay, let us respond to you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
I know that various studies have been conducted, and I don't have the exact data here in front of me, that show that immigrants do not disproportionately commit more crimes than any other ethnic communities in the United States. I know certainly that within any community, and I am an Anglo-American or white American of European descent, that there's crime committed by people who look like me, and there's crime committed by people who are African-American, Asian-American, etc. We actually have seen crime diminishing in this country in terms of that. So I think it is... I can understand. I know that one of the issues around what's going on right now about the fear in communities with people who are undocumented is, for example, domestic abuse, is that women or men who are being physically assaulted or abused by a partner or a spouse are very afraid to come forward and file complaints because of the fact that they are undocumented. And so that's what we got to get to, the issue of if people were here and had the right to stay here, then maybe they would feel freer to go and report acts of violence if they are occurring within their community. So it's a complicated issue, and I appreciate your concerns, but I think it's too easy to just say that immigrants are all committing crimes.
As we come to the conclusion of our program, and I want to give you the opportunity to invite people to either become better informed and about the action this coming Saturday.
Yeah. Well, I would love to see all of you this Saturday at the Tacoma Detention Center. This has been, my daughter and I do this every year for Mother's Day. So she and I will be going up because we think this is something that really talks about family ties, family values, if you will, that we're there together. So I would invite you fathers and sons, fathers and daughters, mothers and daughters and sons, to come with their children and to be there, because there are many families with children who show up to visit a loved one in the detention center. So I think it would be a great way for us as families, whatever your family looks like, to be there and to celebrate Mother's Day, and also to let the people coming know that they are not alone.
Thank you, Pat Broomer of Emerge, for joining us this morning, and I appreciate you for taking the time to share this important information. You've been listening to More Talk Radio. I am Cecil Prescott, and stay tuned for exciting program.
Good morning, it's 8:59, and you're listening to KBOO Portland. Coming up, the Old Mole Variety Hour. Clayton Morgeridge hosts, and we hear about how the United States has provoked North Korea, how policing protects class oppression, what's really wrong with inequality, and the racial casting of The Handmaid's Tale. That's the Old Mole Variety Hour, which is next on KBOO. It's 8:59.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor What the Festival at the Wolf Run Ranch, about 90 miles east of Portland, from June 16th to 19th. What the Festival is a weekend of interactive art, 8 stages of electronic and live music, speaker series, movement classes, and more. This year, performers include Zoo, Cut Copy, Grammatic, OTT, Big Wild, Rez, Sophie Tucker, Baker Matt, Paper Diamond, The Funk Hunters, and many more. Again, that's What the Festival, happening at the Wolf Run Ranch from June 16th to 19th. More information about What the Festival can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Justice Within Reach on Friday, May 12th from 6 to 10 p.m. at Castaway Portland, located at 1900 Northwest 18th Avenue in Portland. Justice Within Reach is the annual Mackenzie River Gathering Foundation's social justice party and fundraiser, featuring food from vibrant table catering and events, dancing with the LaRonda Steel Band, and a performance from 2017 Leela Jewel artist